from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So y'all know I do SEC Country Live every single afternoon, and boy, the amount of Georgia haters that it kind of mounted here over the last few weeks, last few months, it's really pretty spectacular. And listen, I know this. I'm not, so lacking in self-awareness that I'm certainly realize that Georgia fans can at times probably be a little tough to take in a heavy dose. Georgia obviously riding high, SEC champions, number one recruiting class in the country. Dog fans, for the most part, are feeling pretty good about themselves, and I guess that's made some enemies with some of the SEC brethren, fans of Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, Auburn, all kind of taking their shots at Georgia from time to time. And there's, I think, this hope that somehow things for Georgia in 2018, or really the next couple of years, are not going to work out quite as seamlessly as it all sort of seems. It's not going to be as perfect and as well put together as it would appear to be, especially when it comes to the quarterback position. Right now, Georgia's got an incumbent starter who looks pretty fabulous. We'll have some numbers on Jake Fromm a little bit later on that sort of speak to that even more. Jake Fromm is a really solid quarterback, if not on his way to being a spectacular quarterback. Great freshman season, expected to build on that for sophomore season in 2018. Things with Fromm could not be better. And Georgia also has the sort of unusual curiosity of having among the nation's top quarterbacks for 2018 on the roster as a presumed backup here in Justin Fields. But there are plenty of sort of non-Georgia fans who like to stir the pot here and say Fields and Fromm can't coexist together in the same quarterback meeting room. They can't. There's not room on one campus for both these guys. It's almost as if they're wishing ill will onto a Georgia when they say that, or they're just flat out hoping that Justin Fields turns out to be a bust, that he turns out not to be worth the hype and not to be the guy that a lot of people think that he can be once he finally does get on the field and play. And there is a sense in which a lot of Justin Fields naysayers, a lot of Georgia haters, were feeling pretty good about themselves on Saturday on the basis of something that Georgia coach Kirby Smart said. He was evaluating Fields, asked to do so, and he said, well, let me let you hear what he says, kind of saying that, hey, maybe the learning curve a little steep right now for the incoming freshman quarterback. Here is Kirby from Saturday on Justin Fields.
It's a little bit of a wall. I think with all the installation, he's coming in, meeting extra, doing all the things we expect of him, but it's a lot, and we don't taper it for him. We allow him to come in, meet extra, learn it. I think he's really getting accustomed. We've done some different drills that he hasn't done before where he's got to move in the pocket and move around and be able to create space away from the rush, step up from the rush. And I think a lot of that's new for him. I think he's growing in that role. Certainly got good mobility when he gets out of the pocket, and he's done a good job picking things up.
There was a commenter on SEC Country Live yesterday. We played this audio on the show yesterday. There was a commenter, a Florida fan, who said, see, that proves it. Justin Fields is going to be a bust. I think we would all agree that what Kirby Smart says there is far from proof that Justin Fields is going to be a bust. In fact, it may be the exact opposite for reasons I'm about to try to explain here. First of all, I don't want to play too many mind games with you, but I think we all would agree that coaches play mind games all the time. They have a tendency to say one thing when they really mean another, and sometimes it's almost the thing that they say is the exact opposite of what they really mean or the exact opposite of what's going on there. I can promise you this. While I am not inside Kirby Smart's brain, I'll never be an SEC head coach myself. Here's what I can promise you, almost with full confidence. If Justin Fields was truly hitting a wall, Kirby Smart would not be saying in a press conference he's hitting a wall, because hitting a wall means that your confidence is shaken, and for the coach to kind of go out there and tell the whole world what you already sort of know about yourself to be true, that only diminishes your confidence that much more. There's a sense in which you sort of praise guys who are struggling and criticize guys who are thriving as a way of sort of managing the expectations and managing the ego there maybe a bit. I think there's some of that that's true there. I also think it's interesting that Kirby Smart says, hey, we're not tapering anything for Justin Fields right now. Yes, the learning curve may be steep, but we're not treating this young man with kid gloves the moment. And what Mike Johnson said, my partner on SEC Country Live, the former Alabama All-American, he found that to be pretty interesting. He thinks there's a scenario available to Georgia with Justin Fields that might not typically exist for a lot of teams with its freshman quarterbacks. I thought Mike made an interesting point about this subject. Let me play you a bit of the audio here.
I think Kirby Smart feels comfortable throwing it at Justin Fields because he knows Jake Fromm's in the room with Justin Fields. It's not like Justin Fields shows up and he's handing it to him, or like Jacob Eason a couple years ago where there's nobody else really in there you feel comfortable that's going to kind of tutor Justin Fields. He's saying, listen, I'm going to throw all this out to you because I'm going to let you stay up to speed with the rest of the quarterbacks in that room, and I feel confident that watching them play in front of you will get you up to speed. That's kind of what I read from it. It's like, listen, Justin Fields, we could bring you along. We could worry about your confidence. We could worry about everything else that's going on inside of your college career, but this is just spring of your freshman year. At some point, you will watch Jake Fromm go through 7-on-7. You'll watch him go through the G-Day game. You'll watch him watch film in front of him. You'll see how he does things, and that's when Justin Fields will get up to speed.
I think that's what Mike says there is really interesting. I think it sort of presents a silver lining, if you will, for the sort of freshman wall that Kirby Smart describes Justin Fields of, you know, having hit here. And you go back and look at Georgia, it's been a long time since Georgia's been in this position. You know, Georgia had Aaron Murray for 4 years that sort of ended, or I guess 5 years if you count the redshirt year, but 4 years that ends there in 2013. After that, it's been kind of a revolving door for Georgia's quarterback position. It's a year's worth of Hudson Mason. It's a year's worth of Grayson Lamb. Lambert does return in 2016, but here on Dog Nation Daily, we were sure in the summer that Lambert wasn't going to be the starting quarterback for Georgia for the season. Yes, he starts the North Carolina game, but that became Jacob Eason's job after that, which is pretty much exactly as we predicted it would be. In 2017, you know, Eason does come back, but, you know, the hold that Jacob Eason had on the starting quarterback job for Georgia in 2017, or heading into 2017, I don't think was quite as firm as what Jake Fromm has here in 2018, because Fromm had a much better freshman year than Eason did. With all due respect to Eason, who deserves credit for how he handled himself at UGA, the facts are what they are. Fromm's freshman year was just far better than Eason's. Fromm is a more solid returning starting quarterback than Georgia has had since Aaron Murray was on the roster, which I do think gives you a chance to throw as much at Justin Fields as you want, sort of work him to the point of failure to see how much he can handle and how quickly he can handle it. And as Mike Johnson kind of points out there, he also has a chance to learn from Jake Fromm, who succeeded as a Georgia quarterback in a way that not many Georgia quarterbacks have in a while, that can also enhance his learning opportunity here. So freshman wall for the moment for Justin Fields, yeah, that may be true, but it's not the kind of thing that I think upends his chance for success in 2018. If anything, what he's sort of, you know, experiencing very quick here in his freshman season has a way of sort of helping him when he finally does get on the field. I'm not in the least bit concerned about the freshman wall that Kirby Smart describes, in other words. Another point on this that I think that has to be made, and in order to make it, I want to make a contrast with some other quarterback situations around the SEC. Y'all know I don't like Florida, and I hate to even bring up Florida in a conversation like this, but I do think there's a really amazing sort of stark contrast between the quarterback situation at Georgia and the quarterback situation at a place like Florida that would like to think of itself as a program on par with Georgia. Right now it doesn't look to be that way, but certainly Florida would like to think of itself as Georgia's equal. But in terms of the quarterback situation right now, maybe not equal at all. And take Jake Fromm out of this completely for a moment. Just look at Justin Fields compared to what's at Florida at the moment. Listen to Dan Mullen here. This is coming off a scrimmage last weekend where he didn't see a lot of good things from his team. In fact, one of the things that he disliked the most about his quarterbacks was the body language they showed on the field in the ups and down moments. This is pretty interesting from Dan Mullen, and it's going to provide a really interesting comparison with Justin Fields in a moment. Here's Dan Mullen.
They were okay. You know, a couple things, you know, put a lot of different things on their plate. One of the things they have to do is, I think all of them just learn to how to act. You know, I mean, you're always judged on the next play, you know, and too much, I think, they're worried about the last play or trying to force them to make a big play on the next play. Just manage the game and we'll take it one snap at a time. And, you know, no matter whether your last play, if your last play was a touchdown or your last play was an interception, no one really cares. You're always going to be judged on the next play. And, you know, and as soon as you start thinking and grasping that concept, you're going to start performing at a higher level.
Dan Mullen says there he's worried about his quarterback's demeanor, that they're too focused in on the last play, too worried about making mistakes, too maybe down on themselves or whatever. I wasn't there. I don't know. But Dan Mullen clearly worried about his quarterback's demeanor. But when it comes to Justin Fields at Georgia, that's something that Kirby Smart's not worried about at all. Here's Kirby again.
What I like most about him, he has a really good demeanor. You know, he doesn't let the high plays really affect him. He doesn't let the really low plays affect him. He continues to improve.
Isn't that amazing? Sort of an amazing side-by-side comparison. Neither coach aware what the other guy was saying. Dan Mullen criticizing his quarterbacks, including freshman Emory Jones, you know, Felipe Franks, others. He's criticizing those guys for not having a good demeanor, for being too worried about mistakes and too many highs, too many lows. Kirby Smart, on the other hand, saying even in the moment when which Fields is hitting a freshman wall, an experience he's probably never had in his athletic life before, his demeanor is still just fine, which means ultimately I think that Justin Fields is going to be just fine. Freshman wall, Kirby Smart may have said that Fields has hit that. I don't think Georgia's fans should be worried. The experience he's having right now is going to add up to the kind of experience that I think eventually makes him better as a quarterback. Unseating Jake Fromm as the starter? No, probably not. On his way to a really good career when he finally does get a chance to play? Seems like right now, almost for sure. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, with a daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, and we are glad you were with us, no matter how you get to us today. Video, Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, 10 a.m. Radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We love being on the Classic City at the noon hour there. And, of course, podcast form, theworldfamousdognation.com. We'll post the show, Apple Podcasts, Android devices. We're just really, really glad that you have found Dog Nation Daily. And it's been great to see so many social media messages over the last couple of days welcoming in Marco's Pizza as the presenting sponsor of Dog Nation Daily here. And in honor of all that, Marco's got a great offer for you. They want you to meet the boss. It's the boss of all cheese pizza. This just sounds great to me. The big cheese from Marco's, made with five fresh cheeses. Right now you can get an extra large for just $10.99. Extra large big cheese pizza for just $10.99 there at Marco's. And we're really excited about having Marco's Pizza here on Dog Nation Daily. Seth Emerson coming up. Interesting stuff from Seth when it comes to the injury situation and apparently rapid recovery of Zamir White. That's just one of many subjects we'll get into with Seth Emerson when he's on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, a little bit later on today. Going to be a really fun conversation. Also, we'll welcome in another special guest before we're all done today, Hale McGranahan, who covers the South Carolina Gamecocks. We'll get an update from him on Ryan Helinski, the quarterback that chooses South Carolina over Georgia this week for the 2019 class. And are the Gamecocks really a dangerous opponent for Georgia in September? We'll talk to Hale about that, too. Before that, though, a little more from Kirby Smart here, who was asked this week about, you know, the influx of huge offensive linemen to the program and the chances that Georgia, on just its right side of the offensive line alone, might have gigantic Ben Cleveland maybe starting at right guard, gigantic Isaiah Wilson starting at right tackle, two former five-star prospects. Does the thought of that, two big offensive linemen big enough to block out the sun, does the thought of that get Kirby Smart fired up? Well, he says no. Here's Kirby.
Size doesn't excite me. What's inside that helmet does. You know, first time I saw Isaiah Wynn, I didn't exactly get excited, but I was pretty disappointed when he left. So it was not a matter of how they look all the time. It's a lot more about how they play. And I guess if you asked every defensive lineman that Isaiah faced in the season at SEC, they would say that Isaiah Wynn was one of the fiercest competitors, physical guys. Our defensive line didn't want to go against him. They love going against Ben and Isaiah Wilson. You know, so they can get up under them. So it's not a matter of size alone. I think the size obviously gives you the ability to stay in front of the quarterback, keep people off, but your bend and your flexibility and the power you create is a lot more important than your size. So those two guys they're in position battles. I mean, just like a lot of guys out there. There's no starting offensive line in my mind. There's some good young players out there that are competing with older players.
And among those players is one of the names that I just mentioned. Even if Kirby sort of downplays the importance of size, Isaiah Wilson has it in spades. I think it is going to help him at Georgia. And, you know, is the redshirt year helping Wilson be more ready to maybe compete for starting job here in 2018? Here's Kirby Smart on that subject.
I think he's learned a little bit more about how to compete. You know, when you got to come over and block Lorenzo, Davin, Trenton, those guys all day, it certainly makes you come to work. It's a lot better than sitting over there watching somebody else do it and blocking a scout team guy. So he went over there and competed and got better during that time. And he's continued to improve throughout the spring, but he still has a ways to go. We still have a ways to go with the offensive line. There's a couple guys in there playing really well, but that's one of those positions that he's got to compete and he's got to grow as a player to get to where he can be and perform at the same level the tackles did last year.
And then the other name in this conversation, Ben Cleveland, I mentioned him at guard, but Kirby says don't be so quick to assume that's the only spot where he might contribute.
Yeah, he's right tackle, left tackle, and guard. I mean, every one of those guys. We've got seven guys per field, so they do musical chairs. So they get their reps at their primary position, and they get their secondary reps. So Ben continues to get reps at tackle, just so we think we're going to have, you know, more guards than we do tackles, which is usually the case. So he may have to step out and play some tackle.
Couple thoughts from me here on this. Kirby, obviously, when he took the job in 2016, spent a lot of time talking about how much he wanted to get the offensive line bigger. Now he's got that, and he says it doesn't matter. I think we all take comments like that from Kirby. with a grain of salt. But in the real sense of the Cleveland-Wilson conversation here, one of the reasons why they're important to Georgia is about more than just their size. They are both also former five-star prospects coming out of high school. And not every five-star guy pans out the way that you want him to, but you need as many of them to really produce as possible. And Georgia's got a chance here. We saw Ben Cleveland in 2017 better, I think, because of his redshirt season. Maybe the same thing's true for Isaiah Wilson here in 2018 as well. For the Georgia offensive line to be as good as it can be, you need big contributions from both Cleveland and Wilson both. And that's going to be one of those things we watch throughout the rest of the spring and then into the summer as well. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you enjoy Seth Emerson right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And we'll get ready to welcome in Seth Emerson here to Dog Nation Daily. Spring practice has been busy for UGA. Seth has been all over it. He had an interesting note, one of his Dog Nation practice reports the other day about what he'd seen from the two quarterbacks. Pretty crisp for Jake Fromm in drills, maybe not quite as accurate from Justin Fields. How predictive has that been in the past for you, Seth, that when you see two quarterbacks sort of side by side and one guy is, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think, you know, maybe consistently more accurate when it comes to the throwing, how predictive has that ended up being for how those two quarterbacks would play during the season?
Well, I hate to be wishy-washy, but sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Sure.
I remember in 2015, one of the first preseason practices, Grayson Lambert went out there and grounded a few, and it turned out that he was, you know, kind of nervous. It was one of his first practices. He just joined the team, but then we saw during the season, sometimes he was really good, like against South Carolina when he set an NCAA record, and then some other games, he wasn't even close on some passes. That's one that stands out. But, I mean, I don't want to make too big a deal about all the Fields Fromm thing. There was a little bit, I kind of played that up or wrote about it, led with it, because there wasn't too much else in that 13-minute session we got to watch. And for all we know, like when we left there, when they go to team drills, Justin Fields didn't miss a pass and Fromm was intercepted five times. But one of the reasons I did use that, what I saw was that it backed up other things I'd seen this spring in the practice viewings and what I'd heard behind the scenes, which is that Fromm is, as you would expect, kind of picking up where he left off and probably feeling the heat from Justin Fields, is making sure that he doesn't rest on his laurels and that he doesn't, you know, just assume he's got this starting job back. And he's, you know, he's hitting it hard, whereas, you know, Fields is a true freshman who, like they say about all early enrollees, could still be in high school right now getting ready for the prom, and you know, instead he's out there learning a playbook and everything. So they kind of look the way I would expect at this point, is the way I would put it.
So the other day Kirby Smart talked about Justin Fields hitting a bit of a freshman wall, but he also said, I forget the exact phrase, something along the lines of, but we're throwing a lot at him and we're not like taking it easy on him, essentially not like watering down what they're presenting to him. Do we know how Eason and Fromm were treated in 2016, 2017 when it comes to that? There was a far greater likelihood that one of those two guys might have had to play, especially Eason in 2016. Were they had to have give them sort of a more simplified version of the offense because you didn't really know about the other quarterback there? Do you think there is a difference in treatment for Fields this year compared to Eason and Fromm in 2016 and 2017?
I don't think so. I don't think it's a major difference. If it is, it's the same situation where you've got a returning starter and you've got a true freshman. I think Fields, from everything I've heard, is kind of like Fromm. You know, he does work hard in the film room and everything, learning the playbook, everything. I don't think there's a major difference.
So the other day, Kirby also said that if Devon Wilson's recovery is in the same timeline as Zamir White's, that Wilson could be playing here in 2018. At least that's what I sort of took him to say in that regard. Do you think that's an overly – we talked about this last week, but do you think that's an overly optimistic assessment of Wilson's situation here? I was a little bit surprised to hear Kirby Smart describe it that way.
I think it's optimistic. Now, I will say Zamir White looks pretty good out there. We haven't seen him cutting and doing those kind of things, and when, you know, he's not going to be doing any contact drills this spring. He kind of seems to be doing what Chubb was doing around time a couple years ago. But, yeah, maybe they're just being over-optimistic looking at what Zamir White and a big job. I mean, you know, Ron Carson and that head athlete trainer and his staff got a pretty good recent track record here. So, you know, maybe Kirby's kind of looking at that, saying, oh, you know, I think it could be good. But, look, Devon Wilson may be pretty good, but I don't know that they need depth in the secondary. I don't know that they need another body, which there's the danger that Devon Wilson, that's all he would be returning from an ACL. They need somebody who can come in and, if not be the other cornerback, be a solid second teamer. So I would think that Devon Wilson would have to make a really, really quick recovery not to take a medical redshirt this year.
I want to talk about the Zamir White part of this too, but let me just squeeze in one more on this subject. It almost seems like the biggest issue is not how healthy he could be, but how much practice time he'd miss along the way. That for a freshman, that I mean, I'm assuming here, the practice time is just critical. That even if he is healthy before the season's done, boy, he's missed out on a lot of practice where it really seems like that's where these guys get better. I mean, that seems to be a pretty crucial issue in this Devon Wilson story, right?
Yeah. I mean, he was coming along pretty well in off-season workouts and the first few practices. Now, I mean, they like to say that you can take mental reps, which they do with injured guys, as in they can't participate contact-wise in practice, so maybe Zamir White can do that, can kind of watch while they're out there on the field not taking contact. The thing with a guy like Devon Wilson is he's got to go rehab now.
Yeah.
So he's going to miss the rest of spring and summer. And, you know, it's hard to take mental reps when you're kind of out there on crutches, you know, in a big old walking boot and practice is going on and people are zipping by you and whatever. You don't want to get run over and aggravate the injury. So,
right. Yeah,
I mean, in the big picture, I still would expect, but not rule out. I would still expect Devon Wilson a redshirt, but you never say never.
So the other part of this is, you know, the Zamir White thing that Kirby Smart mentions in terms of maybe a bit of an accelerated timeline for his recovery. You just sort of described some of the stuff that you've seen there. If you're a Georgia fan, Seth, it's hard not to get pretty excited about the fact that Zamir White might actually be a part of this 2018 team after all, that all of a sudden it's sounding pretty good for the nation's number one running back for the class 2018. Is that a fair reading on this for the fans out there?
Yeah, I mean, out there against Austin Peay, you don't really need that. You don't really need to rush him back. And not only just because it's Austin Peay, but because you've got DeAndre Swift and you've got Brian Herrien and Elijah Holyfield and you got James Cook coming in. I still think that he's somebody who could kind of be worked in slowly. And if you kind of survive that early potential pitfall run of South Carolina and Missouri and, you know, then he's a guy that maybe you can sprinkle in against LSU and Florida and Auburn. You know, maybe he's fully healthy by then. I don't know. I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing off the top of my head. For all I know, he is ready to go. But, you know, this isn't like Nick Chubb where, you know, that was the number one running back if he was ready to go. And then if you remember, what happened there was Sony Michel had the ATV accident.
Yep.
So Nick Chubb starting when he came back against North Carolina was kind of a necessity. That's not a necessity with Zamir White. So I do think they can take it a little bit slowly. It's just a matter of not only, like, is he ready to go, is he cleared to play, and is he back to 100%? It's, you know, how do you use him? And a lot of that, I think, also probably depends on the two rising juniors,
yeah,
on Holyfield and Herrien. I mean, if one or both of those guys really shows out this spring, then you can really look at Zamir White and say, really, don't rush back. Don't, you know, be very, very careful here. And the other part of it is, again, if he's not like 100% cleared by the opener, you kind of look and see how you do, because if you're definitely going to make the SEC championship game again, which they might have a pretty good idea of that after they play Missouri and South Carolina, then, you know, you want him 100% for that SEC championship game. This is, of course, all the stuff that Kirby Smart and the coaches will never admit publicly.
Sure.
But I do think that that enters their thinking.
I like the story you wrote about DeAndre Baker the other day. Interesting kind of nugget in there. You know, as you point out, he only made just, I guess, what, one of the all-SEC teams. He was a second-team selection by the coaches. And, you know, the thought here is a lot of people have been sort of slow to realize just how effective he is as a cornerback. Seth, even some of my own audience has kind of criticized me from time to time for not giving Baker enough credit for what he did in 2017. Is that the sort of dominant narrative for a Baker here in 2018 that a lot of folks are going to be very quickly coming to realize that he's been a very good player at Georgia now for a while and maybe a signature and sort of critical part of this defense? Is this going to be kind of the awareness year for DeAndre Baker where a lot of the media, maybe outside the bubble of Dog Nation, starts to figure out this guy's been pretty good now for a while?
Well, yeah, maybe like Georgia fans are the ones who need to appreciate it.
Sure.
I remember Kirk Herbstreit saying during the national championship broadcast, like when, and I put this in the story, when Baker defended against Calvin Ridley in the end zone, Herbstreit gushed about what NBA or NFL people think of those two guys, including Baker. But yeah, you're right. Baker did not make AP first or second team, but there were also some pretty good cornerbacks in the SEC. So, you know, it's not like it was an easy call to put him on there. On the other hand, this is a guy who I don't know how he could have had a better year. He never had a touchdown thrown against him. His like pass defended rating or whatever it was, his coverage rating by Pro Football Focus was really, really good. You know, he came back because he wasn't a surefire first or even second rounder, but he was probably going to go in the top three rounds. The thing about the reason I think Baker doesn't get appreciated more is it was just one good year. So one great year, really. It kind of came out of nowhere and was very quiet. You know, the old adage about, you know, offensive linemen and baseball umpires and officials, if you don't know their name, then they're doing really well. I mean, that was kind of the case with DeAndre Baker. The other side of the field, other teams couldn't throw against it, so you didn't take notice of him. But the other thing is DeAndre Baker was a three-star cornerback out of Miami when Jeremy Pruitt went and got him. So it's not like this guy was a major prospect like a Tyson Campbell that people have been watching from the start and have been curious about. No one was asking me in my mailbags about DeAndre Baker and when is he going to play and how's he doing and how's he developing. You know, they were asking about other guys. So DeAndre Baker just gets the starting job midway through the Ole Miss game in 2016 when Juwan Briscoe gets benched, and he just quietly from there solidifies it and ends up having a spectacular 2017 season. And that's just kind of the way it's gone. Now, on the flip side of it, like I said, it was one great year, so we kind of got to see it happen again.
Kirby Smart sort of downplayed the idea of being all that excited about big offensive linemen. I assume this was just him avoiding making it seem like too easy for Wilson and Cleveland to earn those starting positions. This is his way of sort of keeping the fire lit underneath them. Is that a correct read on this, that obviously Kirby would prefer offensive linemen to be bigger? He said that when he first took the job back in 2016, but he doesn't want to make it seem like Isaiah Wilson and Ben Cleveland are going to earn starting jobs just because they are bigger. Is that a fair assessment on that?
Part of it. Partly I think it's that. I mean, partly it's also, you know, tending to be contrarian sometimes with you're asked a question kind of like, well, yeah, but here's also this. But he's also right. I mean, if Isaiah Wynn was back this year, he may not be, he would be the shortest, and I think the shortest, he would be the lightest and shortest scholarship offensive lineman they have. You think Isaiah Wynn would be sitting on the bench?
Right.
Isaiah Wynn would be playing.
Sure.
David Andrews, if he had another year of eligibility, would, you know, he'd be the only offensive lineman they have under 300 pounds, and he'd be like 6'1", 6'2". I think he'd be starting, too. And those were the two guys that Kirby cited. Now, on the other hand, a lot of times you don't really understand and appreciate how guys overcome their lack of size until you have them, until they're playing for you. So I think what part of it may be is also kind of sending a message that, yeah, we do want to recruit these guys who are massive, these Isaiah Wilsons and Ben Clevelands and Jamari Sawyers and Trey Hills and whatever, whatever. But we also want you to have that grit and that technique and that that smartness. That smartness is definitely a word we got to figure that out at some point. But that Isaiah Wynn and David Andrews brought to the table. So, yeah, I mean, it actually would be an interesting case study to see if Isaiah Wynn and David Andrews came back around, whether Georgia would recruit them or Georgia would, you know, end up signing them. But they were definitely, as Kirby said, happy that they had Isaiah Wynn last year.
As we let you go here, no real question about this, but I do hope that people check out the piece that you wrote about Natress Patrick as well. I think this has the potential to be a really interesting story for Georgia. You certainly wrote a good story about it this week at adognation.com. Seth, I hope that people check that out. And it sounds like this is one of those guys that you're going to be curious about peering into this fall and seeing how it all unfolds for Patrick on the field.
Yeah, and I think now the reason I wrote Road to Redemption as the headline rather than Redemption is, you know, let's be honest. I've sat there before when Natress Patrick has said, yeah, you know, this is all behind me, blah, 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 and then it happens again. So you never know for sure. It's only going to take time and it not happening again for everyone to be convinced. On the other hand, you know, he did finally this time go to treatment and went through about a month of treatment. And so the thinking is he's got a really good chance to come through that and for this time for it to stick. And he's just kind of very quietly been out there, you know, assuming his old role. He hasn't been a shrinking violet saying, well, I've got to earn my spot back. I've got to earn my leadership status back because I had these off-field problems and I wasn't with the team for the championship run. He's come out there and he's acted instead like a senior returning starter, which he basically is. So that's been notable, and I think it's been a good sign for Georgia.
Thank you, Seth. I really appreciate your time. We will look forward to speaking to you soon, all right?
All right, thanks.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Always fun to have Seth Emerson on the program. Appreciate him there. Time now for your SEC Through. We'll remind you that SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook and YouTube pages. Hope you'll check out SEC Country Live then. Thanks for being here with us on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza Now. And one of the interesting stories we'll start off here with on our SEC see-through is Alabama airing another episode, releasing another episode of its web series. They have changed the name. I don't know if the name change here is in reference to the LeBron James criticism or not, but it's no longer. It used to be called Shop Talk. Now it's called Bama Cuts. I guess Bama Cuts is probably a better name, but it's the relaxed barbershop conversation involving Nick Saban and others. In the latest installment, Saban says that he doesn't know how to send a text, doesn't know how to use Miss Siri, as he calls her. So, you know, this is their way of being out there. And it's amazing how universal the sort of common opinion on this is among the folks around the country that LeBron James, his criticism of this series, we talked about this yesterday, that it's wrong and Alabama's in the right. I don't dispute that, but I'm surprised that here in the South, more people are not sort of paying attention to the fact that this just seems like Alabama trying too hard. Saban trying to shoehorn a persona change. I don't know. It's almost like I almost feel sorry for him just a little bit. It's like the line from the movie Casino. It's like the don't juggle ace thing. I mean, it's like, you know, Saban's over here juggling and dancing and doing whatever he can to make people think that he's sort of young and cool and hip. I think this is sort of Alabama at its kind of like less than, you know, most stellar, you know, public persona here. I don't think that anyone's going to end up going to Alabama because of a barbershop web series. I think the fact that Saban's been drawn off sides on this ends up being a bit of a bad look there for the Crimson Tide, although I'm sure that Alabama fans are loving every minute of this. I thought that Pro Football Focus, the analytics scouting-based website, they also have their own sort of college arm, and they tweet a lot of college stats from time to time. They tweeted a pretty interesting one about SEC returning quarterbacks and the leaders in what they call adjusted completion percentage. You can see the graphic on your screen from Pro Football Focus if you're watching on video. They explain adjusted completion percentage as sort of removing the drop passes, the throwaways, the spike balls, the batted passes, and passes where the quarterback was hit as he threw. And the highest returning quarterback in terms of adjusted completion percentage for 2018 is Jordan, I'll never pronounce the name correctly, Tamu from Ole Miss, maybe a little bit of a surprise. Jalen Hurts also on this list at 76.2%. Jared Stidham in Auburn, 75.3%. Jared Garantano from Tennessee at 73.6%. And Jake Fromm at Georgia makes the top five here at a 72.9% completion percentage on what Pro Football Focus is calling adjusted completion percentage. Be real careful about this stat. this stat obviously favors quarterbacks who make safe throws over dynamic throws. That's how a Hurts gets on here. That's how a Garantano gets on here. I didn't watch a lot of Tamu at Ole Miss this year, but I'm assuming that's kind of his story there as well. You know, the thing about Jake Fromm that you like from a completion percentage standpoint is not what his adjusted percentage is when you sort of, you know, factor in all this other stuff, but when you look at the most important throws the quarterback makes, those deep, long throws down the field, those passes of 20 yards or more, you know, Fromm's completion percentage was in that sort of 40% range on those, almost 50% on those long throws. That's the kind of thing about Fromm that really gets you excited about him, that you really sort of you know, get going with, is the fact that that Fromm showed a real high completion percentage on the most important throws that a quarterback makes. So that's what I think that speaks to there, although I guess a lot of Alabama fans will be interested to see Hurts' name on that list, given the fact that Hurts is going to be in a pretty high-profile competition of his own here with Tua Tagovailoa there at Alabama. Also, speaking of quarterbacks and speaking of Ole Miss quarterbacks for a moment, I thought it was pretty interesting to see, and we'll have more on this in SEC Country Live later on today, a little bit of conversation coming out of Oxford, Mississippi, that Matt Corral, the incoming freshman quarterback for the Rebels, a guy that flirted with Georgia briefly before Justin Fields committed, was then a Florida commit, now at Ole Miss, and apparently Corral's doing pretty well down there at Ole Miss spring practice. And you know, we talked yesterday about the Florida fans who may be a little frustrated if Will Grier, the former Florida quarterback, lights the world on fire for his final season at West Virginia. Imagine how irritated they're going to be if their one-time quarterback commit, Matt Corral, who Dan Mullen kind of slow played when he first got the job there, if Corral goes to Ole Miss, ends up having a pretty good season. I think a lot of Florida fans may be pretty disappointed about that as well, and we will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, in just a moment we're going to get ready to say hello to Hill McGranahan. He covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for SECCountry.com. Ryan Helinski, quarterback that was supposed to visit Georgia for G-Day, a guy that Georgia's been kind of interested in. He had listed Georgia among his top seven. Well, he doesn't wait around for that top seven to come to a fruition. He chooses South Carolina and going to shut down the recruitment now, apparently. Let me bring in Hale McGranahan on this story. He covers the Gamecocks for SECCountry.com. Hale, welcome to Dog Nation Daily. We're glad you're in the program. How you doing today?
Yeah, Brandon, thanks for having me back on.
So how long had this Helinski thing been in the works? Is this something that you guys had expected him to do for a while? I think a lot of Georgia fans were sort of slow to get in on Helinski. Didn't know a lot about him until recently. Was South Carolina expecting this commitment for some time?
I'm not sure about that specifically. I know myself, I didn't really think his timeline was going to be this accelerated. He sort of talked about doing something in late May on the birthday of his late brother, Tyler. So that was sort of what I was anticipating. I thought he was going to continue taking visits and, you know, checking out those other schools that were in his top seven and then whittle it down to a three and sort of go from there. So a little surprised, but, you know, coming off his second visit to South Carolina, multi-day stay, I think he felt like he was ready to go ahead and make it happen and jump on board with his class.
And to be clear, that visit that he was planning to take to Georgia for G-Day, that's not happening now, right? He's shutting down all his visits on the heels of this commitment, correct?
That's what he told me last night. That's what he's told multiple people. He's 110% committed. That's what he told me, 110% committed to South Carolina and ready to get recruiting for the Gamecocks and trying to build this class around him. And yeah, he's all in with South Carolina.
The people who are watching Dog Nation Daily on video were just seeing some of his video highlights there. I'm sure you've seen some of this as well, and you're hearing some talk there around Columbia. How good do people think he is? As I said, for a lot of Georgia fans, this is a guy they just sort of recently got to know, at least in, you know, some form or fashion. How good do you think Helinski is here?
I think he's a really good prospect, really good player right now, just what he is right now. And I think the comparison that some folks are making around here in Columbia, and there might be a little something to it, is to Jake Bentley, the current quarterback of the Gamecocks, similar in size, both pretty comparable in terms of what they do on the field, in terms of making the throws. I think Jake might be a little more athletic, but as far as like ratings on 24/7 sports and all that kind of stuff that people tend to get caught up with, they're pretty comparable. And when I look at the highlights, I see, you know, similar types of things from Helinski when compared to Jake Bentley. But, yeah, definitely a pro-style quarterback. He ran like a 4.99 40-yard dash at the opening out in L.A. earlier this year. So he's not, you know, the most athletic guy, but one of those types that, because he's smart and knows the game and has a good feel for what's going on out there. When he is asked to pull the ball and run a little bit, he's got a good enough head on his shoulders to know when and when not to and all that. So I think he could end up climbing in the rankings a little bit more here once we get into the summer and he gets out there at the Elite 11 and gets to compete against some of the other top quarterbacks in this 2019 class.
South Carolina finished its spring, at least had its spring football game on Saturday. I think it had a couple practices after that, but a spring game was Saturday. Talk about an up-tempo offense for the Gamecocks this year. Paul Feinbaum says South Carolina could be a dangerous game for Georgia week two of the season. Hale, you see South Carolina every day. Do you think that's true? Is South Carolina potentially a dangerous opponent for Georgia here when we go to September?
I think so, given where it's at in the season, second week. Georgia, of course, has to replace a lot of guys from that team last year, and because South Carolina is going to have them so early on in the season, I think maybe Georgia's still kind of trying to find their way. That certainly helps South Carolina's chances of pulling off the upset. But we'll have to see. You mentioned the up-tempo offense. I think that sort of speaks to what Will Muschamp has become as a coach, how he's developed and evolved. And I think if South Carolina had to pick out a general point in time to play Georgia, I think everyone would go ahead and say, let's get them on the schedule early on and try to catch them while they're still trying to figure things out.
Fascinating stuff, Hale. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to reading some more from you at sccountry.com, and we'll talk to you in the program again very soon.
All right, Brandon. Thanks again.
Good stuff there from Hale McGranahan. Done a great job covering South Carolina for SEC Country, and boy, I tell you what, it's going to be an interesting game between Georgia and South Carolina. You know, I've said before that while I think the Gamecocks are probably a top 25 team here in 2018, maybe even a 10-win team if you really look at the totality of the schedule, this is not the game for me yet that sort of raises the alarm in terms of a reason for Georgia to be concerned. Not that I have, you know, no respect for South Carolina. This is probably more about the respect that I have for Georgia going into the upcoming season. We'll see about that. Interesting stuff from him on Ryan Helinski as well. By the way, also here on Dog Nation Daily, you know, we like to do our Gatorator countdown each and every day. We believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And we believe that in October, when the Dogs go back to Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, they're beating Florida again. 205 days from right now, it's going to happen again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Y'all have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m.